Hello, Linux fans, and welcome to another episode of Destination Linux, where we cover Linux news, reviews, and anything else that may be fun or interesting in the Linux world.
And I'm Rocco, and this is episode 13 of Destination Linux. Hi, Rob.
Hello, Rocco. How are you?
Oh, dude, I'm doing it. I'm making it, brother. I'm making it.
That's great.
What's been going on this week?
It's been a hectic week. I've been really getting back into KDE, and so far tweaking a few things within the Manjaro install on the family PC. Have you tried Manjaro yet?
Rob, have I tried? No, as a matter of fact, I have not tried Manjaro yet, Rob, because I can't get it installed.
No.
Oh my gosh. I have spent the last couple days trying to get it installed and trying to get it installed. And I have tried using the, whatever you call it, the THUS, THUS installer.
Right.
I've tried
right.
The regular Calamaris, and it just fails every single time. I've redone the USB, I have redownloaded the ISO, I've checked the image, I've done everything I can, and I still can't get it installed. The only thing that I haven't tried yet is Gorilla suggested on YouTube that I install 1610, 1604, 1610,
something update.
Like that, and then update. But other than that, I have not been able to get it installed.
Man, I am sorry to hear that. I've had a few people, well, you know what? My installer failed at 97% the first time I tried to install it. And I did not screen capture the message, and I should have, because you're not the only person who's had some issues getting that installed. I've seen a couple of comments where people said, I just can't get it to install. So something's going on there that they should probably take a look at.
There's other people that run it, that install it with no problems. I don't understand. Like, it's almost like it's a hardware issue, maybe, that depending on the hardware that you have in the computer, you're going to have issues because, like I said, I mean, sudo runs it without any issue. A couple other guys run it, and they don't, I don't know. I don't understand why there's so many issues with certain hardware, certain computers, and none with others. So,
yeah.
But we'll eventually get it on there, Robin. We'll get it.
Well, good luck. Exactly. And I think you will. And man, there's something else that I know we're both running right now that I'm loving, and that is the Latte app.
The Latte dock, man, is absolutely awesome. It is something that you can install on Plasma 5.8 or higher, and you can run it like a program, like a Plank dock, but it's so much more than that. It can take the place of all of the panels. Like right now, in my KDE, I don't have a regular panel. I added instances of Latte dock and are using them as my panels, because they integrate directly into Plasma.
That is fantastic. Now, you opened my eyes. So as soon as I saw it, I couldn't wait to install it. And I did. I messed with it for about an hour and then did a video on it, because I'm like, everybody needs to know about this thing as quickly as possible. And then your video opened my eyes to all of the various, the taskbar side of things, where you can really start adding things in more than just launchers for your applications.
Well, there's a task manager built into it that will act almost like a Plank, where it will show you the open applications, but you can add your launchers to that, and you can basically set the panel up, and if this is what you want, you can set it up to be and act just like Unity, where you have the big icons on the left-hand panel, and they stay there, and you know they stay there as shortcuts, but when you open them, you can get to the programs by using them.
Yep.
It just has so many different settings into it. It takes on the blur effect and the transparency that a regular Plasma panel has. You can run multiple instances of it. It has a justify option on it, dude.
I saw that, yeah.
Oh my gosh, it's awesome. Like, the regular KDE panel needs that that's what I've been saying for I don't know how long. They need that justify option in KDE, where if I put the clock in the center, it goes directly in the center, regardless of what's beside it on either side.
Yep.
And it's an awesome thing, dude.
All right, this is a statement I want to make here. So between KDE Connect and now latte. It's like
Dude, it makes KDE absolutely awesome to run, man. I mean,
that's
and
right.
this is okay, but this goes back to why I run KDE, why you run KDE,
Yeah.
because of all the innovation that's in it, because of all the great features in it. Now, they were trying to, the developer actually did some work to maybe try to get it working on something like Mate.
Okay.
And he actually made a branch for it, and I'm going to be testing it out hopefully soon, and maybe we can get it to work on Latte. But right now, or Mate, but Latte, Mate.
Yeah, latte mate, the two go together.
but right now, it's only on Plasma, and that's another reason why you should run KDE.
That's right. Well, with that said, Rocco, we have got, I think, going to be one of our better podcasts because we have a guest. And that guest is AJ Rising.
One of the best YouTube channels out there for tutorials and distro reviews. He takes everything in depth and down to a level where you can understand, and he does a great job at just putting out tutorials that are easy for anybody to watch.
He absolutely does. He was an inspiration for me to get back into Linux after a several year hiatus. And I know he was an inspiration for many other people. And like you said, he puts it at a level where just the average guy or girl can understand what's going on and what it is he's talking about. He was also instrumental for me starting up Linux Quest, just kind of seeing what he was doing and how much he's helped the community. Well, AJ, welcome to the show, man. We're thrilled to have you.
I'm glad to be here.
What's going on, man?
You know what? It's a day off work. I get to kind of kick back and relax, and you know, the opportunity to talk to some other people about Linux, one of my favorite subjects.
Awesome. Yeah, we're known to talk about Linux from time to time.
Once in a while.
Every now and then.
Well, I have to say that your channel has been one of the ones that I have gone to over and over again for topics on learning how to do things, tutorials, distro reviews, and I have watched it for a long time, so I really appreciate talking to you, man.
Oh, I'm glad somebody enjoys it out there.
And
And you know, I enjoy doing the videos. I love what I do there, and you know, it kind of gave me just one to do something I like to do, and then also to you know, being that I do a fair amount of tutorials, be able to help other people learn about Linux.
so what do you have going on your channel right now?
Well, thing I've been doing, I just started a few weeks ago. I've been doing what I'm calling the Linux Mint Challenge, and that kind of got rolling in that you know, for a long time, seeing you know, either gotten email messages or read Google Plus posts or Facebook or you know, wherever, you know, your more experienced users, people that have been playing around with Linux for years and whatnot, that are down on distros like Linux Mint, your base Ubuntu distro, you know, all these distros that are, I wouldn't say they're just geared for the new user, but are trying to be new user friendly. And you know, you'll see these bad comments about how it's only good for new users. It's no good for the more experienced users out there. And I was, you know, I was kind of like, well, you know, let's you know, put that to the test. So, you know, I have been using, well, you know, over the years, I've used a lot of different distros. You know, I was an Arch user for a long time, and then recently, or at least as of end of last summer, really got into using Solus and love that distribution. But you know, I switched my main desktop over to Linux Mint, and at least for right now, running Linux Mint with the Cinnamon desktop. And then After I get done with the Cinnamon desktop, I'm going to do the same thing using Linux Mint KDE. And then I actually had, when I initially proposed this idea on Google Plus, I got a lot of input from KDE users that were saying that they'd really like for me to do it, but do the same thing using KDE Neon. So I guess I'll be doing KDE Neon once I finish with Linux Mint.
You're after our own heart there with KDE Neon, and I've got to admit your previous statement there about statements made about distros like Ubuntu and Linux Mint. I'm guilty. I pick on Linux Mint, but we joke about it though. I mean, don't get me wrong. I really like Linux Mint, but we have the ongoing joke that it's a static page. You know,
exactly
on DistroWatch. Yeah.
Well, I gotta kind of back it up just a little bit as well. When I decided to kind of get back into Linux and started watching YouTube, it really, you know, back when I initially got into Linux the first time years ago, I'm not going to say how many, I don't want to date myself, but, you know, there were no resources like YouTube. YouTube didn't exist.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it was a real struggle back then. And so when I decided to get back into Linux and really eagerly wanted to learn about what was going on, and what all was new, your channel was one of the first channels that I found. And it was so helpful to me because you were presenting things in layman's terms. You were laying things out in a way that I could understand. And that made it so much easier for me to say, you know what? This isn't as difficult as it used to be. And then finding additional resources online, it became exciting. Like all of a sudden I went from, am I going to do this, to, man, I was excited. I couldn't wait to get my first fresh distro up there, you know? So all of that work, all of that time you've put in, man, it pays off.
Well, and you know, I'm glad to hear that. And part of my thing is that I am not a programmer. I don't have my background is computers, and computers is completely self-taught. You know, once again, not to go into the whole dating oneself thing, but when I graduated from high school, Linux did not exist. Windows barely existed. it was a fairly new thing. So it's not like, you know, this is stuff that I picked up when I was in school and whatnot. I had to self-teach myself, and not being a programmer or, you know, in a related field, I think for me, you know, I think it's easier for me to put things in terms that your average person that is not a programmer, that is not, a web developer, is going to understand.
I'm sorry, Rob, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that's very helpful.
Well, that brings us to how you got started in Linux.
I initially played around with it a little bit in the mid to late 90s, and it was much more difficult at that time. Let's put it that way. And then I walked away from it for a while, and you know, it was more of a hobby thing than anything else. And then probably around, I'm going to say 2007, 2008 is when I came back to Linux. There wasn't a, you know, one specific problem. It was, you know, people were first starting to realize, I wouldn't say first starting to realize, but it was really coming to the forefront of how insecure Windows was. You know, people for a long time have been talking about how insecure it was and things of that nature.
Wait,
but,
are you saying that Windows is insecure?
Yeah. at that time, people were really, it was starting to be taken seriously, I guess. And there were a lot of things that I wanted to do that, You know, I was limited on Windows in that if you wanted to do X, you had to buy Y piece of software, which was, you know, hundreds of dollars. And at the time, that just was not in the budget for something that I was essentially going to just play with. And so that kind of got me interested in Linux again, and then the availability of all the software, and things just kind of, you know, progressed from there. And then really about, I guess about 2011, 2012, right about that point is when I pretty much completely went to Linux. And, you know, other than when I am at my regular day job, I don't use Windows, period.
What was it about Linux that made you decide, hey, I need to start sharing this stuff on YouTube?
In part, it was, you know, when I got started, there were some other YouTube channels, or not, there were some on YouTube, there were some other Linux channels, but there wasn't a lot of tutorials, and even the ones that were, I think, I'm not going to say that they were all programmers, but they were not. A lot of times the instructional videos that you found, they really weren't something that the average new to Linux kind of person could follow, and then a lot of people really, or a lot of the videos really focused on doing everything from the command line, and for a lot of new users, that's, as soon as you open up that terminal, it's going to scare them right off.
Right, that's a very true statement, and now you're starting to see far less stuff being done in the terminal. I think so.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff that, you know, if you go back, you know, 5 or 10 years ago, stuff that you absolutely had to do in the terminal. Now, you know, there's at least an option to go and do it from a graphical interface. I mean, having said that, I do like working in the terminal a lot of times, but there are plenty of times when going graphical is at the very least a faster route to go.
Well, and it makes for better video also. I mean, you can only stare at the guy typing on the terminal.
Exactly.
Before you lose interest.
I don't care how nice the background music is.
That's right.
All right. So, what do you think about the latest releases and security vulnerabilities like Vault 7 and the CIA, all that stuff? What is your general take on that?
You know, I think that, I don't know, I guess the way to put it is like, on a lot of, like, if you're going down the route of the NSA leaks, the CIA stuff, you know, what we are reading on WikiLeaks, these days, you know, it is, I guess, confirming what so many people have been saying for a very long time. And, you know, for a lot of people, it's like, oh my God, I can't believe this. And, you know, there's this group of people in the back, standing in the background, waving their hands saying, hey, I've been telling you this for 20 years. I've gotten to the point, anytime that I go online, I work under the assumption that somebody is watching me, you really don't like to say that, but, you know, if you want to keep, whether it's your email secure or text messages or whatever it is that we're talking about, if you want security, that's kind of the way you need to assume.
Well, me and Rob were talking about it last week, and, you know, there's a difference between, you know, having your information out there, knowing that it's out there, and them listening or recording whatever they're doing without you knowing about it.
Oh,
You know,
yes. Yeah.
There's a huge difference between that. So I just
Yeah.
think it's a terrible thing, but the way everything's going, I don't know if we're going to get around it.
No, I yeah, and the revelations about the CIA being able to remotely turn on your cell phone or remotely turn on your computer, what you know, whatever, or whatever smart device, are you being recorded through your smart TV when you don't know it? That's kind of scary.
Yep. Yes, it is. And I recently watched the Snowden movie, and it's a good movie. Number one, it's an eye-opening movie, and you know that some of it, of course, is dramatized, and you know it's got the Hollywood touches added in. But still, if you take the premise of what they're doing with these massive data banks, and then of course the real-world WikiLeaks, where this information has come out now. Where maybe 2 years ago, if we were having this discussion and you just said what you said, AJ, that yeah, could they record you through your TV? You'd have people scoffing at that. You'd have people laughing at that in some cases 2 or 3 years ago. But today, no one's going to laugh at that because of the information that's come out. And, you know, someone even said, well, could they record you through your microwave? Well, we all laugh, ha ha ha. But
Yeah. Is it a
reality.
smart microwave?
Right. Is it a smart microwave? It is a smart refrigerator, with the screen on the refrigerator, and then it's not so funny.
Well, the scary part is that obviously all of this stuff has come out, but that's not all that they have or all that they can
No.
do. They're always ahead of the game as far as technology is concerned, and it's just scary to think about what they actually can do without us
Right.
knowing
Well,
about it.
and like this is, what was leaked. This is what we know. And to your point, what do we not know?
Right.
Yeah. Well, one of the blips that really caught my attention was that they had backdoors through Windows and even within the Windows 10 updates. Now, immediately I wanted to make a joke about that and say, so that's why the updates take an hour and a half. But coming back to that, there was no mention of Linux. You know, there was not to say that it's not happening, but what's your take there? Do you feel like, because I kind of feel like, hey, if we've got thousands of people with their eyes on the Linux kernel and so many people involved in an open way, does that truly make it more difficult for that type of thing to happen? And I don't know I'm not smart enough to know the answer to that, but I was just wondering what your take would be.
I mean, obviously I don't know the answer to that, but just kind of thinking out loud, one, like you said, there's all these people that are working on the Linux kernel, not to mention people that aren't really, quote unquote working on it, but everybody has access to that source code and can take a look at it, and anybody can raise their hand and say, I found something. So I mean, I think that in one case in part is going to reduce the chance of that. And then just the fact that there are, I think, fewer Linux users as opposed to Windows users or Mac users. It's, even with the massive budget that the federal government has and the dollars that are going to the CIA, the NSA, whichever organization we're talking about, there is a limited amount of money. It is more practical for them to go after back doors in Windows as opposed to trying to find one in the Linux kernel. And kind of at the same time, it's very possible, I don't know how likely, but very possible that Microsoft is more than happy to work with the government to provide the back doors.
Well, and I thought about that as well, and I don't mind saying it, but If I were someone in Microsoft responsible for making sure that the US government is using my operating system and that we're getting those support dollars and everything on a massive scale, and who knows how much money's involved in something like that, then would it behoove you as a company to at least make it easier for that kind of access?
Exactly.
Yeah, it always comes back to the money.
Yeah,
So,
that's right.
but we talked about the kernel, and I'm not going to say that there is, but it surely wouldn't shock me to have a backdoor in the kernel, even with all of the eyes on the source code and everything, because I mean, I just think that one, there have been vulnerabilities that have been in the kernel for a long time that haven't been fixed that we didn't see. And two, it to me, if I'm looking at it from their standpoint, it's not gonna be like, well, we're able to record or control these type of computers that are on Windows. But if you're on Linux, well, we don't have nothing for that. you go silent when you're on Linux. So I just think that there probably is something out there maybe we don't know about, but it's just guessing. You don't know. You have no idea what they
I
have.
think a good statistic to see is what do the people who work at the NSA and the CIA and what do they use in their spare time? And if the overwhelming number was Linux, well, maybe there's a good reason behind
Yeah.
that.
Hey, anybody up for some coffee?
I know AJ's got his cup there.
I got mine
You want a
going
refill,
right
man? All right. So, do you use a VPN, AJ?
Yes. And it kind of gets back to what I said before, with basically assuming I'm always being watched. If I am interested in sending something securely or don't really doing anything securely, that's when I fire up the VPN. And
Well,
obviously that's not a fix all for everything, but it is a starting point.
I run a VPN and I run it all the time, and I usually use private internet access, and that covers not just, your browser window and your email, but it also covers the whole internet connection itself.
Right.
So, and I mean, it's not like I started using a VPN just solely for the CIA. It was more for, I have a Comcastic internet connection, and I really don't feel like giving Comcast every piece of information that goes through my connection. So,
Exactly. I've gotten mine through Time Warner, and they are more than happy to tell you that we know every website that you visited, every IP address, they
they got it all.
yeah.
Well, that's why I started using a VPN. And, there's times where private internet access has a GUI program for Ubuntu-based operating systems,
Yeah,
but it doesn't have it
that and
for
actually,
Arch.
that's who I have my VPN through.
Nice. Well, I'm unable to get it working on Arch, so I have to do the OpenVPN, but yeah,
Yeah.
oh well. Do you use a VPN, Rob?
Well, I do. I turn it off and on. So if I am doing something that involves any banking or any information that I feel like there's a multitude of things that I do there that I feel like, I just don't want this information out. But it's not something I have on all the time. I need to check into what you're using there with the
Well, I've checked out a ton of different VPNs, and I have done trials and, paid for some. And there is, to me, there's none that are better without having to pay an astronomical number of
Right.
hundreds of dollars a month. There's none better than private internet access.
Yeah, I do. I think it is the pretty much the best bang for the buck.
Yep.
So you had touched on something earlier, and this is kind of moving away from the security discussion, but you talked about the number of users Linux users as compared to, of course, Windows and Mac even.
Right.
Do you get the feeling that Linux is finally starting to kind of come into its own? I mean, we joke about this where every year there's an article, at the end of the year or at the beginning of the year, is this the year of Linux? Or the article says, well, 2017 wasn't the year of Linux. However, there's always something about it
Right.
being the year of Linux. And I'm not getting hung up on that, but I feel like, and maybe it's because now I'm kind of involved more with an online presence, and you see people, new people coming into it all the time. Do you feel like it's growing? Do you feel like it's finally getting some momentum, where compared to, say, 5 years ago?
I think the use is up, and I think in a way, and Windows 10 I think really helped Linux with the disaster it's been.
Way to go, Microsoft.
One thing that I've kind of encountered, and is it growing or is it not? I'm not sure on that. I'm always talking to and getting questions from people that are completely new to Linux distros. So, that's a good sign. But, 5 or 10 years ago, if you mentioned that you used Linux for your operating system, it was like, oh, this is some, hacker's tool, or, oh, you got to be like a computer genius to do that. And now, if you make that comment, you might hear somebody say, oh yeah, I never really got into it, but I tried Ubuntu for a while, or I tried Linux Mint, or hey, I saw that and was considering checking it out. What do you know about it? That sort of thing. So at the very least, I think it is more accepted than it used to be, or not viewed as something outside of the mainstream anymore.
Right.
And part of, and whether this is the fact or not, I don't know, but I'm part of me thinks that one of the big things that has helped, besides the disaster of Windows 10, has been Steam,
Oh, yeah.
and all of the gaming titles that are now available on Linux.
That's a great point. That is probably the number one answer that I see as to why someone isn't Linux full time is games.
Yeah.
And so Steam really has helped that.
Oh, absolutely. And because I can't say the number of people that I would talk to online, or even in person, that say, oh yeah, I really like Ubuntu, but there's this one game title, and I have to use Windows for that. And that's, it's their favorite game and they can't give it up.
That's right.
Well, there's definitely that point out there, and I'll have to say that I do dual boot Windows on a separate drive so that I can play Battlefield. And I don't think that's going to be coming to Linux anytime soon, but the
No.
list of games that are supported by Steam has grown and grown and grown,
Yeah.
and it's all about the money as far as the developers are concerned. So if there were enough people for them to make it worthwhile to work and make their games work on Linux, they would end up making their games work on Linux out of the box.
Yes.
But right
Well,
now,
and to that point, I think we're finally starting to see that, in the past year or so, there are a lot more games, especially from the from your independent developers, your small companies, that sort of thing, where they are out of the box developing titles that are on Windows, or they're multi-platform, whereas for a while, and you'll even see this on some of the titles that are on Steam, I mean, really what you have is you have a Windows game that's got a wrapper on it so that you can run it in Linux. But we're finally starting to see natively developed Linux games.
And we're also seeing the performance of those games be come up to on par with Windows.
Oh,
And that
absolutely.
includes the NVIDIA drivers being updated with them. And but on overall, the performance of, there used to be games that could play on Linux, but you couldn't get near as FPS or any type of good performance out of them. And now you're seeing it to where it's
Right.
almost exactly the same.
Well, and with the success of Steam, now you're seeing other companies who are looking at that, and they're looking at that revenue platform, and so that's going to be a case where competition is good. And we just saw a story where I think Mozilla's looking at, offering the ability to play through Firefox and other, that's going to be something where it's just going to continue to grow and get better. And as it does, like you said, performance will improve, cost will come down, and hopefully then the availability of more high-profile, high-end games, and maybe that's the last wall that has to be climbed before everyone says, well, beyond that now. It used to be, I remember when I first got into Linux, it was more enterprise stuff. So, how do I synchronize all my stuff? So if you were an Outlook user and you needed that for work and you had a sync, sync set up through, oh my goodness, Exchange, you were pretty much out of luck. Well, now with everything moving to the cloud, which is kind of on the same plane as we're talking about here with gaming, that issue is almost non-existent. You rarely hear about that as an issue anymore because everything can be accessed and synchronized through the cloud.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah, like you, and the kind of the plus with the cloud, and it goes beyond just Linux itself, is, we're not we've moved to not only multi-platform but multi-device. Remember the days of when you had your Exchange Mail, and you were using a POP3 email, so it so much different than today when you're using IMAP, the IMAP protocol, and hey, I can check my email on my phone, I can check it on this computer, I can check it on the computer upstairs, and I can check it from work, I can check it on my tablet, and the platform makes absolutely no difference anymore.
That's a freedom. We talk about Linux freedom, but that's part of it, is having that freedom. Now you don't feel like you're roped in or you're walled in, and Linux just,
Well,
or GNU Linux expands on that.
well, and and the freedom there is one. That's one of the things that, for me, that is really appealing to Linux. Just the fact that, however I want this system set up, I can set it up. Don't like the Cinnamon desktop? Well, pick GNOME 3, pick Budgie, pick whatever desktop environment you like. For almost every application, there are several options. If you're looking at email, and you don't want to use a web-based interface, you can go the route of Thunderbird, you can go Evolution, you can go KMail. I mean, there's just tons and tons of options for your applications.
AJ, we don't know what in the world you're talking about, switching desktops. Why would anyone do that?
So, what is your favorite desktop environment?
My personal favorite is GNOME Shell.
Wow, GNOME Shell. I was hoping it
Probably.
was going to be KDE,
Well, and I tell you what, KDE is like a close second for me.
right.
And the thing about GNOME Shell that I really like is that overview that you get when you hit your Windows slash super key, hit that key, all of your windows that every application that you have open, you get an overview of everything that is open, and I can I can do a keyboard search, and I can move things to other virtual desktops. Just really, really like that desktop. Now, having said that, it is not the perfect desktop. Usually, every time there is a update to the next GNOME Shell version, you have issues with the extensions because they're not being updated as quickly, because a lot of the extensions, you know, they're being developed by people that are outside of the GNOME Shell team. So, there may be some lag there, and some group may develop an extension and it just does not work well.
Right.
But kind of the beauty of the system is, you don't like it, get rid of that extension, don't use it.
AJ, up until really the last month and a half or so, I would have said, "Oh, okay, well," and kind of moved on. But having run exclusively the GNOME desktop for over a month and experimenting with those extensions, I get
And
it.
that's a long time for Rob.
That's a long time. No, I totally get it. I mean, I developed an appreciation that I never expected. And that's kind of the fun, exciting part of being in the Linux world, is that it's a discovery process. And a lot of times it's an ongoing learning process. And my eyes were open to a lot of small things, just like you said, the activities overview. I didn't think much of it the first time I saw it, but as I started to use it more and more, you do miss it. It's one of those things you realize it's handy, and it's just because you didn't see it doesn't mean it's not handy, and you find it, handy. So are you planning on giving KDE a long run or a long try, or?
I'm going to do this Linux Mint challenge, and my original idea was to do a month on the Cinnamon desktop, then a month on Linux Mint KDE, then a month on Neon. But I'm kind of rethinking that, and just sticking with each of those longer. And then, as I get towards the end with Neon, if I'm happy enough, then I may just stick with Neon. We'll just, time will tell. I did last year, I went on OpenSUSE and was running KDE there. Loved it. It was working great for me. And really, if it wasn't for the fact that I wanted to try something new, I may have, still be there, but I got bit by that distro hopping bug again, and had to
I
try
see you
something.
remember. The
So,
DHA Club.
yeah, the DHA Club. Well, I don't know if you know about our 800 toll-free DHA, Distro Hoppers Anonymous number. So you had mentioned running Windows at work. Are you exclusively Linux, if you don't mind my asking, at home? Is that?
Well, let me put it this way. There's a hard drive on my computer that does have Windows on it, and other than using that for, I'll use that for like when the next version of LibreOffice comes out, and I will install it both on my Linux desktop, and I'll install it on Windows so that I can compare and contrast, because they are not exactly the same. And I'll try that with, other multi-platform software, just so that when I'm doing my review or tutorial, whatever, I can point at, hey, I'm mainly using the Linux version, but if you are on Windows, you will see, this difference, that sort
Right.
of thing. There's a couple of game titles that my kids play that they like to play on that Windows drive, but for daily use, I really do not use it.
Well, you hit on something else too, I was curious about. There are times when I don't really spend the amount of time that I should with a distro to really go through and talk about it at a level that's much beyond surface stuff. And one of the things that I've always appreciated about what you do is you can get into multi-levels. It's not all just surface. And I always picked up on the thought that when you're going through talking about a specific subject with a distro, you've spent some time with it. And is that typically your practice, is that you're going to spend a lot of time with whatever it is before you actually go on and do a video about it?
Generally what I will do, other than unless it is, unless we're talking about an alpha or beta release, I will not run a distro in a virtual machine and try to do a review from there. Because to me, unless you're put at the very least putting it on real hardware, you're really not telling people a whole lot about the distro, and I don't want to call it a fake review, but there's a lot that you can miss just by trying something out only on a virtual machine. So I've got a on my main computer, I've got a hard drive that is a it's a older 100, I think 120 gig hard drive that is out of a laptop that I've got set up into four different partitions, and I'll put a distro on each of those different partitions, and for at least a week I will try to do the bulk of, whether it's writing emails or just using LibreOffice or, whatever, just daily use kind of things. I'll try to do that at least a week before I do a review on it.
That's excellent. And it again, it shows, because as you start moving from channel to channel, trying to learn, and that's what many, many people out there are doing. They've got a buddy who says, "Hey, check out this channel, and I think we need to load you up with Linux." You've got a friend out there trying to talk another friend into exploring Linux for the first time. And now, if you need to learn how to do anything today, you need to fix your washer, you can go to YouTube. And
Exactly.
and so there's lots of people out there that I pick up on where people are just kind of in that discovery process, trying to determine, is this something I can do? And I think going to that level, more than just a video playing in the background of windows popping open and closing and music playing, not disparaging those people. There's a place for that from a visual
Yeah,
aspect. But if
exactly.
you're wanting to learn, what you're doing is great, AJ.
I appreciate it. I don't want to give Linux a black eye or any distro a black eye. So, I won't necessarily, if I've got have a bad experience with a particular distro, I'm not going to go and do a video just doing nothing but bad mouthing them. But when I do the review, it's going to be a full review, and I am not going to sugarcoat any of the problems that I ran into. I've had distros where I get frequent crashes, and KDE Neon first came out, I had all kinds of issues on my desktop computer with it, and that's kind of why I wanted to go back to it and try it again, see if whatever the problems were, is if it no longer exists.
But I think that goes back to what you said about doing reviews on VirtualBox rather than doing it on real hardware.
Oh,
Because
absolutely.
although there's a place for the VirtualBox reviews, there, if you don't do it on real hardware, you're not giving the distro a real review, because the distro has to react to the actual hardware. So you had issues with KDE Neon when it first came out, and yet when I started using KDE Neon when it first came out, I had no issues. Yet I had
Oh,
issues after
exactly.
updates were there, so.
And I have seen, kind of to that point, not just Neon, but other distros where, one person, they thought everything worked great right out of the box, and then another person, they had issue after issue after issue, and a lot of it just comes down to hardware compatibility. That's
Well,
right.
I'll just say Manjaro is one of those.
Oh,
There's a lot of people that love Manjaro and it works great for them and they have zero issues. And yet, I have trouble every time I go to install Manjaro, I have trouble with it. And if and when I do get it installed, and yet I've tried for a week now to get Manjaro installed on another drive and I can't because the installation fails no matter what I try to do with it. But in the past, when I have got it installed, it's run well for a week or two and then it just. Something always seems to go wrong with it. But that goes back to, like I said, there are some people that run it all the time and have zero problems with it.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, you know, on the Manjaro issue, it runs great on my Dell laptop. It won't. I run into the installation issues and just stability issues if I try running it on the desktop computer. Runs great in virtual machine though. So.
Well, you know, that's just the nature of what it is. And unfortunately, I think some people overlook that because you'll hear about it, you know, right away. If you're on there singing the praises of the stability that you have had with your particular system that that's running on, unfortunately, that doesn't mean that that's going to be the case for, you know, the 1500 people who watched that video and saw how happy you were about it. It's
Right.
a matter of hardware differences, graphics cards, you know, on and on and on. And I've had, let's face it, we've all had bad installs also, where
Yeah.
it's just the first install did not go well for whatever reason.
Yeah. And you know, usually if I have you know, I try installing, you know, Distro X on my computer and the installation fails, or you know, I get it installed but it is, you know, very buggy and you know, it keeps crashing on me, I'll go and I will wipe that drive partition, do a reinstallation just to see, let's make sure that there just wasn't an installation issue or something of that kind, because it's entirely possible it happens.
That's right. That's right. Well, AJ, I've got a question for you that I'm sure you never get, and this is this is one where we always chuckle about it. So, brand new user, I'm coming to you for the first time, AJ. What Linux distro should I try? Or you, or
And
what top three would you recommend?
yeah, because that one's,
It's a
yeah,
tough one.
it is a tough one. Probably, like, if we go with the top three, you know, Linux Mint would be one of my top ones. Ubuntu would be a top one. Probably Peppermint. I think Peppermint is a good new user distro as well. And that one is very light on the resources as well. You know, straight Ubuntu, you know, right, with the Unity desktop, I would put that a little towards the bottom of that new user list just because, compared to Linux Mint, I think Linux Mint, they've got a lot more, it's more ready to go right out of the box, I think. And the Unity desktop, there's a little bit of a learning curve involved. Whereas, say, if you're running Linux Mint Cinnamon Desktop, it's pretty intuitive on how it's work on how it's work the layout. It's similar enough for somebody that is coming from a Windows environment that they'll probably be able to figure out, you know, getting to the menu and that sort of thing.
Well, that was my next question for Linux Mint. Which environment would you recommend? Cinnamon?
Yeah, I think Cinnamon would be my top pick. Number two being the Mate desktop. You know, Cinnamon and Mate, I think they're similar enough from a functional standpoint that, you know, they're pretty close as far as that goes. Mate a little lighter on the resources, but I really like that menu on Cinnamon. KDE, you know, I love KDE, but you know, if you go to Linux Mint or Linux Mint KDE, it is already set up and ready to go for you. So from that standpoint, it would be all right for a new user. But KDE, as far as setting up the panels, customizing that, there's quite a learning curve there. Yeah, it is the ultimate in customization. You can essentially do anything you want with it, but it takes a while to learn how to do that.
Yep, I agree. There's a excuse me. There's a sea of settings in KDE, and you can dive in and dive really deep and be lost.
Right. In the KDE thing, you know, one of my big gripes has always been KMail. KMail is an awesome email program, but it is a nightmare to set up. Now, once you get it set up, it is, like I said, it is the ultimate Linux email program, but it's quite a chore to get it set up.
Well, I tried KMail before, and it is absolutely awesome as far as custom. It's just like KDE. Anything in KDE, you can pretty much customize to your heart's content. But I did have one issue one time where it ended up losing email. Now, this was a few years ago that this happened, so I'm not saying it is that way now, but I did lose a few emails at the time, and I really never went back to it, only because of I didn't want to take the risk of losing emails, because at that time I was still running Popmail or Pop3, and I didn't have the IMAP set up, and like I said, I did lose emails and never went back to it. Right now, I could probably go back to it with no problems.
Yeah. For my email, I stick with Thunderbird, just because no matter what distro I use, no matter what desktop environment I use, Thunderbird always works.
Yep.
I've been surprised. I, out of a whim, decided to try ClawsMail, and it's a very simple, straightforward. And I've actually, it's so funny talking about pop accounts. I actually have one pop account that I still have to use. It's work related and didn't even realize that ClawsMail will accept pop, and it does. And I find it's really the complete opposite of KMail, which you're both absolutely spot on. KMail, as far as mail clients, is the best that I have found as far as being able to really get things set up in a way that would work for you and with all the options you need and customization that you need. But I dread the thought of even going through that process with it. That's how complicated it can be. Whereas ClawsMail is the exact opposite. It's, you know, type in your account name and bam, and it's very simple and straightforward. I'm waiting on a real killer. I'm old fashioned in that, yes, I use Gmail and everything in the cloud, but I like having a mail client. I am
the same way. Yeah. You know, I've got all of my email accounts set up as IMAP so that when I'm out on the go, I can go and I can check, I can check from my cell phone or from my tablet. And then also sometimes I'm on my desktop computer, sometimes I'm on my laptop. So IMAP makes that easy, but yes, I would much rather use a mail client as opposed to a web-based interface.
I would love to see an Outlook, something as good as Outlook, and I'm going to praise Outlook because I've always been a fan of Outlook. And have you found anything other than KMail, AJ, that you would say comes close?
Probably not. Evolution, I think they try. But I have had issues even recently, because I usually, every time when the, maybe not every time that there's a new update, but every so often I'll go back to Evolution to just give it a try. And one thing I have noticed is that there can be issues with Gmail and Evolution playing nice together. Sometimes you'll go to download your Gmails, and everything works perfectly. Just instantly, you get that download. Other times, you'll just sit there waiting and waiting and waiting. And you know there's email messages there because you just checked on your phone and you could see that there's email messages waiting for you, but you just can't get them to download into Evolution. So I think they try from that whole suite perspective of having, the calendar, having your email, your contacts, all that together in one place. It's an awesome concept, but they still need some work on making all those pieces work together. I think Thunderbird is a pretty good suite, but you're still missing some stuff there. The Lightning calendar, it is not really integrated the way that the calendar is integrated into Outlook. Now the all the extensions that are available for Thunderbird, I mean, that's really neat. There's a lot of really custom stuff that you can do there, make it really versatile, but I still think that Outlook has them beat.
Yeah, I would agree there. A Thunderbird, I always feel like I've stepped back in time somewhat when I use Thunderbird. But the function's there. It's just that the overall UI, I feel like, okay, it's 1997 again. Well, AJ, is there anything you'd like to just share with the folks out there that listen to the podcast about things going on within the channel, things that you've got plans for, or anything like that?
Not, I mean, there, I already mentioned that the Linux Mint Challenge thing. So I've got that going on. And as what I'm trying to do is I am doing these, and I don't really want to call them new user distros, but, these distros that, on a normal day-to-day basis, I probably wouldn't use just because I'm such a fan of, like the Solus, Arch, the ones where you got to put a little more time and effort into getting it set up. But I'm trying to do more instructional videos for the new users out there. So I've actually got one that's sitting on my desktop right now. I need to finish editing to get it posted, but on the Cinnamon desktop, how to go through and get your panel set up, customize the desktop to the way that you want it set up, not necessarily the way that it came from the Mint development team. So I'm going to try to focus a lot on those new user tutorials. But beyond that, I try to get input from my viewers, what kind of stuff are you guys wanting to see, which sometimes can sometimes is good, sometimes is bad. You'll get that comment that they want to see how to do this one off the wall thing that almost nobody is interested in. So it's like, that's
Right.
I want you to do a video, please, AJ, on how I can put my sound applet right in the middle of my screen. Would you do that?
But you have a website as well, right?
Yes. With how busy I've been recently, I haven't been keeping it as updated as I would like, but that's just the way it is. Given a choice between web development and making YouTube videos, I prefer YouTube videos. But yeah, my website is ajryzik.com, just my name. And there's if you go to my YouTube channel, there's links to it there, so easy enough to find.
And you're active on Google Plus?
Yeah, that's usually Google Plus. As far as social media goes, Google Plus is my favorite place to go. I'm on Facebook and Twitter as well, but Google Plus is where I'm most active. Plus, there seems to be a lot of Linux users there, so it's a good company.
That's right. That's right. Well, very good. Is there any other link or anything you'd like to share with anyone?
Pretty much my channel or my webpage, that's the main places to get a hold of me. And, you know, anybody ever wants to talk or ask a question, I've got links in both places so that you can get in touch with me.
Well, AJ, we appreciate it immensely, and I know the Destination Linux listeners will enjoy this chat, and we appreciate all the work you've done. Keep up the good work, and thanks for being on.
Oh, you bet. I've had a good time.
All right. Thanks, we'll AJ. Check you later.